Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, September 17th, 2019, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Our show tonight tells the uplifting story of how Starseed Hotline was born and how the people involved came together. In retrospect, it shows how even when you think you're wandering aimlessly through the third dimension, your star team has a plan for you. And this year, 2019, is the 10th anniversary of our website launch, and we're so grateful to have met thousands of Starseeds, helping them to remember their missions and empower their work. And we have wonderful teams of Starseeds helping with this radio show, providing support at our Starseed quests, and joining each other for lots of Starseed projects all over the world. Tammy, Anastasia, Lavendar, and myself are all so appreciative of the ever-increasing number of Starseeds waking up and finding their way to us, and we are honored to empower Starseeds to better serve the planet. And, of course, our website is starseedhotline.com. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, bringing topics of interest to Starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. And we would like to thank Kathy and Fiona for hosting the switchboard tonight. And we may not have any questions or comments, but thanks for being there, ladies. We have an online Starseed community at starseedhotline.ning.com, and it's a safe place to connect with other Starseeds thanks to Tammy's helpful dedication. You can download our shows on iTunes or right here on Blog Talk. And if you want to show your support of our program, please just click follow on our page here and you'll get our weekly show notices if you enable those. Our main website is starseedhotline.com. And the Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And due to a continuing flood of requests for readings, there is now up to a 16-week wait for the Stage 1s. And Lavendar is now booking February and asks that her repeat clients book at least 6 months ahead, especially for solar returns, maybe even more than that. And new clients, please hold off if you can until we can get caught up. Every time someone with a YouTube following recommends us, our waiting lists grow, so your understanding is greatly appreciated. Now, if you have a birthday coming up, you don't want to miss out on your 10 hours of power. You can find out when that happens by requesting your solar return timing, and that only takes a couple of days to get that. But if you want the Stage 2 interpretation of that chart, that's when you'll need to order at least 6 months or more ahead of time to make sure you get it before your 10 hours, because our waiting lists are overflowing. But this is a wonderful thing, though, because it shows an ever-increasing number of Starseeds waking up and joining a much larger community of light that covers the globe. So first up tonight, I would like to introduce Anastasia with her wonderful Starseed News. Yay!
Woo! Hello, everybody. It's a wonderful day. It's great to be with you. It's good to be alive. Well, we have a lot of news tonight, and I'm sort of got flood on the mind, so when you said we're flooded with readings, I thought, oh, well, we've got other kinds of floods. The flooding with readings is excellent, the flooding for that, because it does mean that people are waking up. However, in the traditional sense of the word, flooding is occurring all over the planet, not necessarily in awakening ways, but with water. Just amazed at the number of stories that have come out this past 7 days about floods. I'm only going to share some of them with you. It goes on and on and on. I mean, it gets boring after a point. It's really, really something's up with this. Floods have killed 33 people across northern Thailand. The floods have submerged large parts of northern Thailand that for the last 2 weeks. It's displaced 22,000 people that have had to be evacuated. The pictures on the internet are dreadful. And North Africa has been hit with 3 months' worth of rain in 40 minutes. A flash flood in Algeria's capital of Algiers inundated subway stations and the airport. It turns major boulevards into muddy rivers and trapped drivers in their cars. Now, surprisingly, no deaths were reported from this, but witnesses say the damage is enormous from this downpour. 16 inches of rain fell in 40 minutes, which, as I said before, is the equivalent of 3 months of normal rainfall. Can you imagine 16 inches in 40 minutes? I mean, you wouldn't be able to breathe. You wouldn't be able to catch your wind with that much rain coming out of the sky. That's just phenomenal. And in New Zealand, heavy rain last week caused flooding and landslides in parts of New Zealand. More than 10 inches of rain fell in 24 hours. It caused evacuations and road closures all over that area. And in Cambodia, their floods are getting worse. They've had flash floods late last week, caused hundreds of farm animals to die and displaced thousands of people, with some loss of life there as well. They say the situation has worsened since rivers began to rise early this month, in the last 17 days. In southern Laos, same thing. Tropical storm Podal and tropical depression Kajiki slammed into Laos one after the other late last week, dumped an estimated 16 inches of rain in parts of southern Laos. The flooding has affected the lives of 572,000 people and caused considerable damage to buildings and farmlands, of course. And in Spain, at least six fatalities have now been confirmed from the harsh weather that's been affecting southeastern Spain within the last 5 days. The worst-hit provinces experienced swelling of rivers. It caused raging floods. They got 10 inches of rain in 12 hours. On top of days of heavy rain before that, they've had 10 times the normal amount of rain for this time of the year. 10 times. We're not done yet. West Africa. Flooding has been reported in parts of Nigeria, adding to this long list of flood events that have affected countries in West and Northwest Africa over the last few weeks. Meanwhile, the death toll from flooding in Niger has increased, while reports that flooding in Chad has displaced hundreds of families. Other countries of the region have also seen major flooding over the last few weeks, along with the Central African Republic and further north, all the way to Algeria and Morocco. Wow, lots of water. Well, they have discovered something pretty interesting. I thought the article to be somewhat vague, but I couldn't dig up any more information on it, so I'm just going to share it with you as I happen to have it. They've discovered a lost continent, but it's not Atlantis. Atlantis has not been absolutely identified yet, but what they have discovered is a hidden continent that has been mapped out, now mapped, that's the news. Geologists have reconstructed a map of a continent that's nearly a quarter of a billion years old. It's a vanished landmass that lies submerged below the ground of southern Europe. Now, the only visible remnants of this continent, they call it Greater Adria, are in limestones and other rocks that they say were once mountains high above the ground, long ago in prehistory, a sunken continent underneath southern Europe. I don't know how they ever figured that out. I mean, for me, a rock is a rock is a rock. So they dig down and they see more rocks. But somehow they have figured out that this is a continent, and they have mapped it all out, and they've given it a name, a lost continent under Europe. Well, I haven't mentioned this. We have lots of science news I have to pick and choose. But interestingly enough, they are finding new species of things. Several in the last few weeks have stories about this have come up, that they're discovering new species of this, that, or the other thing. Well, now, they've been studying electric eels, and they have all gotten quite a shock, the scientists have, because they've discovered that rather than just one species, there are actually three species of electric eels living in South America, and that one of these generates a bigger voltage than any other bioelectric animal. They have genetically analyzed these species, these discoveries. It's two species, and the two new species have been discovered to originate from the first species, okay, that has lived on this planet for over 7 million years. 7 million years.
Wow.
So nobody knew that there were three species of electric eels. They thought there was just one. And they're highly, highly, highly electric. The article went on to say that if you get stung by one of these eels, particularly one of the ones that they just discovered, the one with the big voltage, has the effect of one of those massive stun guns that can stop the heart. That's how electric they are.
Wow.
And they communicate through their electricity. And the electricity helps them navigate. It's not just for defense and to hunt prey, you know, to kill prey and to defend themselves. They navigate by these electrical signals, and they talk through their electricity. Isn't that something?
Wow.
Pretty amazing. We communicate via electricity, too, through our devices. So, really something. Well, do you think Earth is unique? Oh, not our starseed. We know that we're not the only planet. This article says that Earth maybe just isn't so unique because a group of astronomers, can I say astronomer? I'm not 3 years old. I'm saying this like I'm 3 years old. A group of astronomers have found Earth's long-lost cousin. They have discovered the first ever habitable terrestrial planet with water in its atmosphere. And this is according to new research that's been aided by the Hubble telescope. Now, they gave this planet a name, very dull and uninteresting. I think they do that intentionally. They call it K2-18b. But this is a exoplanet that is twice the size of Earth with eight times its mass. And a research paper on the new find was published in the Nature Astronomy Journal last week. Big news. They said that the study's lead author said, "Finding water in a potentially habitable world other than Earth is incredibly exciting. It brings us closer to answering the fundamental question, is the Earth alone in the universe?" Well, apparently not. First discovered in 2015. I don't know why they're just now telling us about it, but anyway, this planet resides in the habitable zone, also known as the Goldilocks zone, of a distant solar system. It sits at just the right distance from its red dwarf star to maintain liquid water on its surface. The researchers noted that the planet's star, which is smaller and cooler than Earth's sun, could possibly emit deadly radiation, and if that were true, it'd make the world hostile to life as we know it. But of course, no one knows for sure if that's the case, and no one knows for sure if the planet is inhabited or not. For sure, the discovery of water on a habitable planet is a game changer in our question about possible life on other planets. Water vapor had previously only been discovered in the atmospheres of super hot gas giants like Jupiter, but now we know that there is another planet similar to Earth that could house life. It has water. It has the right ingredients in the right zone of space. That's really a big deal. I remember it wasn't that long ago when they were desperately searching for water. And not only then did they find it in gases, and they found it in frozen soil and stuff like that, but now they have found it in an atmosphere, a planet with an atmosphere and water.
Wow.
That's great. That's exciting. Well, I know our starseed aren't, I don't think, they're particularly addicted to the Internet too terribly much. I mean, I think we all do research, but probably they're just not as nerdy as some of the public. But we all probably use Google. Many people use Google. Well, if you have used Google and you have found that one day it wasn't working, I can tell you why. There was a Google search outage that triggered existential crises in young people as the panicked people scrambled for alternative information sources. Internet users worldwide found themselves plunged into unexpected darkness as Google servers went down unexpectedly. And their Google search queries returned absolutely nothing. Because the public is so reliant upon Google, and know nothing else, they were forced to try to find other methods to get information. Some people discovered there are search engines such as DuckDuckGo or StartPage, if they could manage to even realize that there are other search engines. So people initially started to go to Twitter to see if anybody else had experienced the absolute unthinkable, that Google wasn't working. They called it the horrific 21st century dark age, only to learn that they weren't alone. The outage appeared to be widespread, with no explanation available other than a promise from somebody somewhere out in cyberspace that the engineers have been notified and are working to resolve the issue. Well, as it turned out, Google was out for an hour or more with random interruptions in service for several hours longer. So, there you have it. Maybe some people found out that Google is not the only alternative out there. Well, they did. They found that out. They discovered that. Well, on to genetic engineering. Let's talk about this for a second. This is really concerning, but it's not going to surprise you. I mean, you know, come on. Failed GM mosquito control experiment may have strengthened the wild bugs in the wrong way. Now, we've talked about this. We've talked about that one of the most disturbing ideas to control mosquito populations has been to release genetically modified male mosquitoes that produce unviable offspring. We've been saying that's not a very good idea. But unfortunately, a test of this in Brazil appears to have failed, with genes from the mutant mosquitoes having already mixed with the native population. Researchers from Yale University have now examined mosquitoes around the area of Brazil where the largest test of this technique took place over the last few years. And not only did mosquito numbers bounce back up in the months after this test, but some of the native bugs they discovered had retained genes from the engineered mosquitoes. And worse, the genetic experiment may have had the opposite effect and made the mosquitoes even more resilient to pest control. The bugs in the area are now made up of three strains mixed together. The original Brazilian locals plus strains from Cuba and Mexico, those were the two strains that were crossed to make the genetically modified insects. And they say this wider gene pool could make these bugs more robust as an entire group. Now, the scientists are assuring the public that the mixed mosquitoes pose no extra health risk, but they admit there is still cause for concern. It's unclear exactly what effect this will have on disease transmission or other control methods. So one wonders, how dare they assure the public that there is no extra health risk when nobody really knows for sure? Researchers are saying it is the unanticipated outcome of this experiment that is concerning. Maybe they'll learn. It would be nice, wouldn't it? They would learn. Well, what do you guys think of this? Johns Hopkins is going to open a new $17 million psychedelic research center. They are. Johns Hopkins University recently announced the opening for the Center for Psychedelic and Consciousness Research, a facility within Johns Hopkins Medicine that will be dedicated to studying psychedelics and their potential to be used in medical treatment. This research center is the first of its kind in the United States and the largest of its kind in the entire world. The research effort has received $17 million in donations from private investors, and they tell us that researchers will be studying the effects of psychedelic substances on the human brain. Anybody has suffered from heartburn? All of you? Any of you? Do you take Zantac? Well, don't. The popular heartburn drug, Zantac or ranitidine, has been found to be tainted with a carcinogen. This comes from peoplespharmacy.com. I really want to recommend this website to all of you. I hope you will frequent it often and sign up for their newsletter. People's Pharmacy reports that on Friday, September 13th this year, the FDA officially acknowledged that some ranitidine or Zantac pills have been found to contain the impurity NDMA, which is a nitrosamine that is a potent carcinogen. Well, who discovered that the Zantac, or this ranitidine, is tainted with carcinogen? Well, surprisingly, a private group. Because of concerns about generic drugs in general and the contamination catastrophe in general with pills, one pharmacy decided to start testing all of the drugs that it dispenses. The name of this pharmacy is called Valisure, V-A-L-I-S-U-R-E. It's an online pharmacy based in New Haven, Connecticut. The company has a motto, and it says, Valisure is the only pharmacy that chemically tests every batch of medication that we sell at no additional cost. Batch-tested medication delivered to your door, end quote. Well, the scientists at Valisure discovered that the ranitidine and Zantac samples it was testing had unexpectedly high levels of the NDMA. Now, Zantac is an extremely popular acid-blocking drug. And People's Pharmacy goes on to say, according to our calculations, over 15 million ranitidine prescriptions are dispensed annually. That does not count all of the over-the-counter bottles of Zantac that are sold. Goes on to say, if Valisure's testing procedures are accurate, that's over 30,000 times the permissible FDA level for NDMA. Now, Valisure calls for the agency, and the FDA, to recall and suspend sale of all lots of all products containing ranitidine. The pharmacy asks the FDA to investigate the manufacturing processes for this drug and instruct people on the safe disposal of it. Well, the FDA has responded, and they have somewhat minimized this alarm, and not too much to say about it. They say it's generally not harmful, so you might want to read about this on peoplespharmacy.com and see what you think. I wouldn't be taking any of it myself. So, but there is a pharmacy that tests everything they send to you. I had no idea about this pharmacy. I think it's something we might want to investigate. All right.
Absolutely, yeah.
How about a quote to help you through the week? Isaac Asimov said, "The saddest aspect of life right now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom." Well,
Yeah.
Stating the obvious, isn't it? And he also said, "Never let your sense of morals prevent you from doing what's right." I like that. That's a goodie. So with that in mind and from my heart to yours, have a beautiful week, everybody. Thank you, Ariel. Talk again
Thank you
next week.
So much, Anastasia.
Sure.
You do a great job, and there's always important stuff that you're just not going to hear anyplace else. So thank you for your hard work.
Sure, you're welcome. Love to all of you. Night-night.
Okay. Talk to you next week. Okay. All right. I'm going to get your mic open, Lavendar. And I'm so excited to tell this story because, you know, we've told it at the quests, but we've never really explained or told the story of how all this got started. So I'm kind of going to ask you a few questions just to get it get the ball rolling. So you've told the story many, many times of how you went to Cairo and on Pleiadian lineup in 1983 at the instruction and request of your Pleiadian team, and you did that, and you took the little tiny Giza crystals that came from a mine in Arkansas, and you took those crystals into the Great Pyramid where they were charged, and I'm just giving you the thumbnail version of this because we've told this story many times on the radio. So when you came out of the pyramid on November 19th. Did you come right back to the United States? or did you travel some more over there?
No, I actually went to Israel and I was told to go plant some geezers in the Valley of Armageddon, which I did. And then I then flew to Switzerland and stayed there for about a week just to cool out and, you know, get a new sense of direction, because so much happened to me in the pyramid when the Pleiadians came. I, you know, it was like a huge adjustment to come back to Earth and say, okay, this is what I have now. And then when we left Switzerland, we came to Greece. And I spent, I don't know, 3 or 4 days on the island of Crete. And then suddenly I was reminded that I had to immediately change our plans and fly back to the United States. And that's when I realized that a lot of walk-ins had happened over Pleiadian lineup. That's where a lot of celebrity walk-ins I'm talking about, that you could actually check and see how many of them were placed in the hospital. There was a lot of exchange of beings from the Pleiades. A lot of Pleiadians went home, and a lot of them came back to the planet. So after that, I took these crystals, and at that time, we didn't have the internet. We didn't even have the fax machine yet. So when people found out about these crystals, they wanted to have some. They wanted to place them. I was told that these geezers were coated with energies not of this world, 7 million times celestial power. And when I said, well, how strong is that? They said, we have nothing on the planet to measure them with. So they went to lakes and mountains and trees and people, and they just kind of had a mind all of their own. They're really tiny in their structure, but they're so powerful in their energetics. So a lot of people started contacting me wanting these crystals. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, Australia became a major point for people to go and plant the crystals around Ayers Rock. And all these years, I've wondered why so many people were led there. I mean, you have to, you know, get an airplane for long rides. I mean, it's a really taskmaster to get to the Ayers Rock. Well, years later, I found out that symbol on top of Ayers Rock was the same symbol they found recently in the last few years in a pyramid in Giza in Egypt. And it meant time travel. So I thought, oh, maybe they're going to make the rock do something crazy or port it, or I don't know. I've been waiting to know about Ayers Rock. But anyway, I started, you know, handing out the crystals to people that wanted them. And then in 1991, I guess, I was in Georgia. And I had decided that was time for me to. I had a lightning experience where I really had come to terms with. I'd been hit, you know, 3 times by lightning, and I was getting to the point where I was really getting tired of being tested with lightning. So I was at a friend's house, and she said, "You know, there's a little cabin down the road, and you can go down there and have a session with this person." And first of all, I didn't want to have a session with this person. I was in a state of mind there where I thought, you know what, I just need to walk away from this work for a while. But this person kept insisting, said, oh, no, you've just got to do my solar return. I hear that you do really fabulous work with your birthday readings. And so I agreed. And when we got down there, it was a screened-in porch. And as I was talking, lightning started striking. And it first struck, you know, one side. And when it started happening, I thought, you know, it's time for me to embrace lightning and not be afraid of it. And I really took full power that day. And after I took it, the lightning hit on 4, 2 in front of me and 2 behind me. And every time it happened, I would just breathe. And it was like I was gaining strength and energy from the lightning. Well, after this happened, I said, now what? It was like, oh, boy, what have I done now? So I got in my car. I heard, well, you need to go to Florida, and you need to find the eagles. And I said, what eagles? Well, you'll know. You will know. And I, at that time, I had a Lincoln and an American Express. And so I just took off and went to Florida. And so now you go ahead with the rest of the story.
Okay, well, some at some point after you came back from Egypt, you went through Arkansas.
Yes.
And you left some crystals.
Yes, my hand crystals that I used in Cairo were given to me by Garland Milhellen. And when I got back from the initiations and everything, I came back to Arkansas, and I went to his shop. And it was called the Monte Cristo. And I said, you know, I've got a feeling that someone's going to come here one day, and you're going to know who to give these geezes to. And I had them in a little envelope. And I did that, I guess, back in 19, let me think. I guess it was in 83 when I got back. So, I had handed them to Garland in 83. And then when I got the instructions to go to Florida to find the eagles, I didn't really have it in my mind I had not even remembered that I had actually given them to Garland. I had to be reminded of it later. So now you can go ahead with your story.
So while you were doing, you know, the high planetary work, in the Great Pyramid, in the Pleiadians, and the walk-in demonstrations and all of that, while you were doing that, I was living in Florida. And from 83, when you were there, until, you know, like 8 years later, I was singing, trying to work on a CD and, you know, get the record deal and... But I just was going from one gig to the next gig, and I felt like I was just like, what am I doing? I can't just continue to do this. So I felt like I was a little bit lost, even though, you know, I had work to go do. I just had no idea where I was going with all of that. So in 1987. I was singing in Key West, Florida, and I'd been there for about a year. And one night, I was in this big hotel where I was performing, and this guy came in, nice looking guy, and on my break he came up to me, and he noticed I was wearing a crystal necklace. He came up and said, "Do you believe in crystal energy?" And I thought, well, that's a line I haven't heard before. I was intrigued. And, you know, we started seeing each other. And it turned out that he only came down there for, you know, like, weekend vacations. He lived in Jupiter, Florida. And in order to be closer to him, I left Key West and I moved to Jupiter, Florida. And was doing the same thing, you know, singing here and there. And in 86 that I moved to Jupiter. And then in 1987, I actually married the guy. It only lasted about 6 months, but from my honeymoon, I want to go to Arkansas and dig for crystals. And he was okay with that, so... In 87, I went to Arkansas, and we went digging at all the places that we, you know, have been going with our groups. And he wanted a big crystal. To him, size was everything. And we were driving down the road, and we just saw this old building with a side yard and a whole bunch of tables. And this one table was really, really long, like, you know, like a huge... long, you know, table, and on that table were 16 giant crystals. I mean, some of them were 4 feet long, and we're talking about single terminated crystals. Some of them were like 4 feet long. They looked like torpedoes sitting on this table, and they were, you know, all different sizes, but they were huge. You know, we turned out that the guy that owned the place was Garland Milhollen. your friend. Of course, I had no idea about you or any of that at the time. And you know, and he said, you're welcome to look and be with the crystals, but they're not for sale. So it's like, well, you know, he really wants a big one. So do you have any friends that are in the business that might have a large crystal? And he said, well, I'll have to look around. Well, we'll come back tomorrow. So, well, I guess an important part of the story, while we were there that day, we were chatting and kind of bonding because apparently I physically resembled his daughter who had just died from cancer. And he was still, you know, grieving. And when he told me that, I was moved and inspired. I sang him the Lord's Prayer, just standing there in the shop. I mean, there was only us. And I sang him the Lord's Prayer, and he started crying. And it was a very touching and bonding kind of moment. So I said, well, we'll come back tomorrow. And when we went back to see if he'd located some large crystals, he said, well, I've given this some thought, and there will be no negotiation. You can go out on that table and pick any one of those crystals, and it's going to cost you $100. Now, I mean, even that long ago, those crystals were worth $5,000-$10,000 a piece because they were so huge. But there had to be an exchange. So we go out and we're walking up and down this table looking at these crystals, and I had my eye on the smallest one because it was the only one that didn't have the tip broken off. And if a crystal doesn't have the point on the end, it doesn't work. It can't focus energy. And if they're really cloudy and milky, they don't work either. They've got to have that clear. And there was only one of them, and it was the smallest one. And I was standing there with my hand on it, and I looked over at Garland, and his eyes were twinkling. This man had the thickest snow white hair and eyes that were so blue, you could almost not even look in them. You know, so sometimes people's eyes are almost transparently blue. And I looked at him, and I thought, this is definitely the crystal god right here. But I looked over at him, and his eyes were twinkling. And I had my hand on the little one, and I was like, I really like this one. And he smiled, and he said, that's the purest one. And that is the one that came home with me. And he also gave me a huge piece of amethyst. It was an amethyst geode. Looks like an amphitheater. I mean, it's just really big. And another huge cluster of crystals. But I was thanking him, and, you know, we gave him the money. And just as we were about to leave, he had already, I'm saying he because I really don't even want him to say his name, he had already gone out to the car, and I'm standing there alone with Garland, and he said, come over here. And he took me behind the counter, and he said, I was given this by a friend of mine, and she told me that someday someone would walk in here and I would know that these were for her or him. And he handed me this little kind of tiny, tiny manila envelope thing, just about the size to put a house key in. And on the outside was written Lavendar, Cairo, 1983. And he opened it up and he poured some of these teeny, tiny crystals into his hand. I'd never seen anything like it. They were tiny, perfectly clear, double terminated, about the size of a grain of rice or smaller. And he said, these are for you. And I didn't know what to do with them. I was honored and I was thankful, but I had no idea what he had just given me. So I took them home and in 1987, and I put them in the top drawer of my dresser, because something inside of me said, these are so special that if you don't know what to do with them, don't do anything. Just leave them be. So they sat there for another 4 years. So here, this is the 8 years where I'm just kind of wandering aimlessly, going from job to job, not really having any kind of a plan for the future. And I was still living in Jupiter, Florida. So one night I was at that time singing at the Jupiter Beach Hilton, and I had a friend who was a chiropractor, and she used to come and see me all the time. And this one night she came in, and she had a friend of hers who was in town at the time and introduced me. And we started talking on my break, and this lady, her name was Susan, she was kind of going on and on about, and just the way she was talking, I still remember, she's like, oh, you've got to meet this star maiden. She's in town, and you just, she's so fantastic. You've just got to meet her. And I'm thinking, what the hell is a star maiden? I didn't know. And I thought, well, yeah, that sounds nice. And I kind of forgot about it. And then she said it again. And she said, well, I do tarot readings. Why don't you come over to my hotel tomorrow, and I'll do a reading for you. And I thought, well, okay, that sounds fine to me. So I went over and sitting at the table with her, and she was, doing the cards and talking. And she said it again. She said, you have just got to meet this star maiden. She's in town, and you'll never meet anybody like Lavendar. And at that point, my heart just about flew out my mouth, because that was the name on the envelope that had been sitting in my top drawer for 4 years that Garland had for 4 years before that. And it's like, all right, this was a moment in time that I'm never going to forget. And I couldn't get home fast enough. She had given me the hotel where you were staying, your phone number, the room you were in, and I called you up, and I said, well, you don't know me, but we have a mutual friend, and his name is Garland Milholland. And like it was yesterday, I remember your exact words. You said, do you realize what you're saying? I thought, well, yeah, I think I do. I had no clue what I was saying. I had no clue of the implications of that. So you asked how to get to my house, and you were there in 30 minutes. And I had just happened to have had my chart done, and I remember handing you the chart, and you'd look at the chart, and then you'd look at me, and then you'd look down at the chart, and then you'd look at me. And I felt like you had X-ray vision, like you were looking right through me. And we went to that Chinese restaurant. Remember, we were there for about 4 hours. And you just started downloading all this information about the Pleiades, about extraterrestrials, about the star seeds. And even though, I had only found out about crystals a couple of years, 2 or 3 years before that, I knew I was hearing truth. I just knew it. And at that time, I was living on this little farm in Jupiter. I was living in the downstairs apartment, and there were some other people living in the upstairs apartment. And that girl had been in an accident. Her name was Heather, and car accident, and she'd broken her arm really bad. And she was in a lot of pain, going back and forth to the hospital, and just laying on that couch, which was pretty much right above my bedroom. Taking pain pills all day. Well, you came to my house in Jupiter, and you showed me what to do with the little geeses. And you said you put them in a little tiny triangle, and it opens this standing column or wave, and it's like a portal. And I thought, well, that sounds pretty cool. So I did it right away, and I put these, right by my bedside table. And after about a week, the girl upstairs, who was on the couch right over my bed, she went to the hospital, and they thought they were going to have to put pins in her arm. And it's like, this is amazing. It just started to heal. And her arm healed up so quickly, she didn't need the pins. And a corn plant, there was a corn plant right by the couch that flowered. I've never seen a corn plant flower, but the energy of the geese were so strong. It healed her and, you know, flowered the corn plant. And then she says, like, you know what, we're going to move back to New Hampshire. So she goes back to New Hampshire, and the upstairs apartment was empty. So that's when you moved in. And we had our adventures. That was in 91. And you told me, well, why don't you just tell what did George Van Tassel tell you about waiting? And you've said this on the show before, but this is a part of the story. When you talked to George Van Tassel in 1977.
Yes, when I took a walk with George out into the desert, and I didn't realize at that time what was actually happening to me. I had to look back later and go, oh my goodness, that's what that was. We walked out into the desert, and he would reach over and touch my forehead, and then he would start downloading information. He'd tell me about technologies that were coming to the planet, walk-ins, the Tesla kids, the Tesla technology that would be bringing free energy to the planet. He was talking to me about his Integraton and the information that was given to him to build it, just all kinds of things. And remember, in 1977, I mean, nobody was talking about walk-ins. I mean, Ruth Montgomery had just maybe had written a book, but I don't even think it had come out yet. I don't think her book came out until 1980. So there was not any mention. So I didn't understand when he was talking about walk-ins what that really was. So about 3 hours of this, he says to me, well, it's time for you to go back to the house. And he pointed to the rock, giant rock, and he said, I want you to know that when that rock cracks, that's when it's time for you to release your information. Safety of information, he said, that I was carrying at that time. So I went back to the house, and everybody was having dinner, and I said, well, George will be in a little bit. And I went to a bedroom and laid down because I was so blown away with what he was sharing with me. I just had to go be by myself. And so I laid down and went to sleep, and I woke up about 10:30 or 11 and heard all this racket in the living room, and they were all upset because George wasn't back, and they were putting together a team to go look for him. And this went on for, I don't know how long, maybe till 1 or 2 in the morning. I don't remember the exact time. And then all of a sudden, George just came, and he just walked in the door. And he goes over, and he touches everybody in their third eye. And then he sits down. And what I realize now is he erased the very fact that he'd been gone or something. I'm not sure what he did with all the people that he did that to, but he didn't do it with me. He wanted me to see what was transpiring. And what had happened was when he walked out into the desert, they came and got him and brought a walk-in. So I got to observe and experience what it was like to be in the presence of a new walk-in. About a month later, he and Doris, his wife, were over in California at a motel, and he had a heart attack and died. And Doris called me immediately. I was in Santa Monica that day, and she knew it because we kept close touch with each other all the time. And she called me and she says, you've got to come quickly. George is dead. So when I got there, she showed me the table and the lamp. The table had been split in half, like lightning had struck it, and the lamp was crushed. Everything in the room was rearranged. And she was hysterical. And I said, oh, my goodness, what has happened here? Well, it took a little while to figure this out because I had realized that I was being put in a position to take charge of his funeral and everything that happened. And I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, he's just downloaded all this information to me, and now he's gone, and I don't even know who to talk to about it. And remember, it was 1977. So about, I can't remember when it was, but it was probably after the funeral, Doris came to me, and she said, I need to tell you something. I said, what? She said, that wasn't George. What do you mean? She said, when he came back from that walk with you, he was different. And I had to know, I had to keep it to myself because I thought, oh my goodness, something really happened out there in the desert. And I don't know who to talk or tell about it. And she said, I'm telling you now that that was not the same George that left with you. Another George came back, and he was totally different. So I said, oh, my goodness. So that was, he gave me the demonstration of a walk-in. So then years later, when the rock actually cracked, and I think that you had an experience with a man that had been there and that knew Doris at that time, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. So now we just fast forwarded 10 years from 91 to 2001, and it was February of February of 2000, 2001. Now I can't remember, but it was one or the other. I had met someone who knew Doris and George. And had been to Giant Rock, and I had called you to say, because you're not going to believe this, you know, I meet someone in Atlanta who's connected to this whole story, and it was right about, I think it was 2001, that the rock split, just like George said.
Yeah.
And you knew then that it was time to release your information. But even then, the internet wasn't anything like it is today, and we weren't really sure how to go about doing that. So, and you were a little, you've been holding it for so long that it was like, okay, you can let it go now. You couldn't, you know, just like it had been secured away for so long that, I mean, you had trouble making the decision to go kind of public with it.
Yeah, and so, also I'd like to add that on that walk with George, he told me that I would be in training with ETs for 25 years and that I was to take my high strangeness experiences and I was to write them down and put them in a bank vault. And I wasn't to release them until after the crack happened with the rock. And so when the rock cracked, I mean, I just went... It was almost like I felt it in my soul the day that it happened, and I have written about that in another article. But I thought it was very unusual that this man came to you after he'd just been to Giant Rock, and so there was another connection that was happening. Yeah, and you and I had already moved to Georgia by that time.
Right. Yeah. We moved up from Jupiter. In early 92, so we moved
right.
up to, you know, the to Georgia, and then it was, I mean, you were taking care of your parents at that time, so that wasn't the time to launch, and it was in 2008 really when, you know, I started thinking that, you know, we could do a website, and we were talking to Anastasia at that time, and you know, I put together the website, and kind of like the rest is history. But with what has happened since then, in the very beginning, so we launched in 2009 the website, and then the radio show in 2010. So, I mean, we were doing, you know, readings, and at that time, when we first started off, you were still doing the stage one readings.
Right.
And then it became apparent that really your forte is, well, you got to be talking to the person to get that third file in your brain that opens up. You've got to have that voice print. So you quit doing the stage ones. However, in that time, that very short period of time when you were doing the stage one, you know, recordings where the person doesn't actually talk to you, you had done a recording for a lady named Claire, and Claire had a friend named Tammy. And Claire said to Tammy, if you want to, you know, well, how did she say it? This will be the best $25 you ever spent, because when we first started, that's what it was. And we have since evolved from, you know, given 20 minutes to given 40, 50 minutes. But at that time, so Tammy got a reading from you. And that was, you know, enter Tammy. So very early on. And then in 2012, we went to France with Kathleen McGowan on the Mary Magdalene quest, I think we called it. And Tammy was in on that. She came to France. And I have to say, Tammy, I am still so proud of you because you had never been on an airplane and your first trip was overseas. That took so much courage, and you showed up. And I remember we were at this place called Magdalene's Grotto, and that's where something really wonderful and otherworldly was activated, and Tammy's healing work just went up to like four or five levels at the same time. But that's where when we got back from France, Tammy wanted to do it's like, let's get a reunion for all the people that went to France and take them to Arkansas and go dig crystals. So it was Tammy who came up with the idea for what has now become the Starseed Quest. And it was the Crystal Quest at first, and then it's much more now about than just about crystals. So over the time in 2012, 6 months later, we had our first Crystal Quest, and it was, you know, it was all Tammy. She came up with the idea, and she had she stayed vigilant. And now, you know, the whole three sister spin, it's you and me and Tammy. So all of this happened, and think of all the people that we've had that have come to Arkansas. And I remember when Tammy was kind of formulating this idea, we were looking online, you know, trying to see some places, some venues, and Tammy says, "Well, you know what? I'll take a hit for the team. I'll drive to Arkansas and go check this out." And she really, really wanted to go. So that's just a sense of humor there. But so when Tammy got to Arkansas, I mean, she called me up and she said, "This is surreal. Everywhere I go, people want to be by me. They want to stand by her. They want to come and talk to me." They rolled out the red carpet, and it took years for her to figure out what that was all about. But it was like, you know, Tammy returned home. And by 2013, she had moved there. And now, you know, Tammy lives at the center point of the crystal grid on sacred land. And I just wanted to say that there have been so many wonderful people that have come together at the quest, that have claimed their power, that have gone on to do wonderful things all over the world. We have people coming from all over, and none of that would have happened without Tammy getting that idea about taking people to Arkansas, and now it's evolved so much that and it just keeps getting better and better and stronger and stronger. So
I'm sitting in Tammy's house now on top of a crystal grid, and I have been here since April, have not been back to Oklahoma after the passing of Richard. So I love it here, and I'm trying to figure out ways to move here because this is the land, and the land speaks to everyone, I think, that comes here. You know, the land is so inspirational. It's beautiful. We have lakes and trees and these beautiful crystal mounds that are here, but that it's more than that. It's like people that come here somehow, the you know, quartz is an amplifier, and it amplifies people's personalities. It amplifies their records. It makes their blood crystals pop, and so when they come here, they have, you know, quite an experience just from the land alone. Even if we didn't have them, you know, doing certain things on certain days, even if they just came and hung out here, I think it would still happen. It wouldn't happen like what we do, but I'm just saying that the land is calling people to come home. And there's a homing device that seems to be happening in this crystal vein here. And I have the feeling that a lot of old Atlanteans will be showing up here sooner or later, and different pockets of karma will be taking place from this land. So I'm very thrilled to see so many people that have returned. We have alumni that come back time and time again. We're having another alumni this November, and we put out the calling, and within 48 hours, we were already filled. So to see the people coming back time and time again, that really tells you something. It's like there's something that they get each time they come, and it's like an upgrade, I think. That's the way I look at it. I saw one gal that came, and she was very quiet, and she was very demure and very scared. Now she's taken her power. Now we can hardly recognize that quiet one anymore. We can't shut her up. The joke that we have with her.
We've had a lot, like, you know.
Yeah, people just change, yeah, for the better.
Yeah, and just, yeah, and when they come back, it's really apparent that they have really stepped up. And it's amazing to me how people that feel the call to a particular gathering, the other people that feel that call too, they've got soul records together. They recognize each other.
Go ahead. Let me just interject something here that I think is really important, because I've come to know that the kids that were born after 1980, there's the ones with star markings, they have some kind of resonant field in their system that when they hear a code or hear something, it puts them on alert. Like, I started asking people, I'd say, well, how did you find me? And they go, oh, I had a dream about the word starseed, and I got up and Googled and found you. The first two or three times I heard that, I thought, well, that's cute, that's quaint. After number 30, I went, wow. Went to the ship, and I said, what are you guys doing with that word starseed? And they said, well, don't you remember? That's the one code word that all of you agreed upon to find one another, because technology was going to be up on the planet where you could find one another. And I went, wow, that's true. Okay. And it keeps happening, and it keeps happening, and it keeps happening, and it's just kind of gone over the top. So with that being said, the people that do come to the quest, they have to have these star markings, or they're not invited. So when they walk through the door, a lot of them think, oh, I'm going to go in. First thing I'm going to do is see Lavender when I hit that door. No, when they hit the door, they start seeing their soul family. I'm probably the last person they get to say hello. That's how extreme it is when they hit that door. And it's a calling. If it's not a calling, they can't walk through the door. We've had people even buy airplane tickets and get to the airport, and they couldn't get on a plane to come because they couldn't walk through the door. All kinds of things have happened that let us know that this is an extreme ET or starseed calling, because the people that get to walk through the door were meant to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've talked about the orchestration, and, you know, Tammy and I are the ones that organize the quest. And then, you know, you kind of walk in with the meat and the filet mignon, and we take care of all the side dishes, you know, and organizing and taking emails. And, you know, so between Tammy and I, we get to see that every quest, there's 10, maybe 20 people who say, oh, yeah, I'm coming, save me a spot. And then something happens, and they can't make it. And it's not that there was anything wrong with those people. It's just that they weren't part of this particular tapestry. It's like, no, we're working with these records right now, and only people. So it's not only about the star markings, which are really all that we have access to, but from aboard ship, they're moving people like pieces on a chessboard. And it's like, no, you come at a different time. You got to come this time. And they move people around, and that's how come when they walk in, they recognize each other, and there's so much, harmony. But yeah, there are people who they think they're coming, and they really really want to, but it's not their turn, and that happens every single time, and even to the point where you know, Tammy and I, it's like, okay, maybe they'll make it this time, and then lo and behold, there'll be a quest when they show up, and that was the one that they were intended to come to, and then of course once you've come once. It's a lot easier to come the second time because you'll be bringing the codes from whatever group you were with to the current group. But yeah, and you know, I mean, Tammy does so much in organizing, in paying attention to details, making sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. So,
she's also introduced her new feather work that she does at these quests. The last two or three quests that we've had, we have introduced the feather work that Tammy does, which is so incredible, that activates so many people with their Native American records. The times that we've seen her do her work, there's just a calm in the room, and yet everybody's eyes are big and watching, and the things that people are seeing that happen in the center of the room, it's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. It's hard to describe on radio.
Yeah. And Tammy does a very big, moving, impactful presentation that is, the information is so sacred that I didn't even want to, give a topic. Excuse me, but it's the true history of what has really happened on that land, and she keeps getting downloaded with more and more information. But that is only for our private time at the quest. But
right.
it's momentous. It's momentous, not only in clearing records, but in returning to joy.
How many quests have we done now? I forgot the number.
We've got the 28th coming up.
8, okay.
28.
Wow.
Yeah. And in August we had, it was our 27th quest, and we had 27 people show up.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then in May we had 33 people, and 11 of them were alumni. So I look at the patterns and the numbers of it, but it's like this was not a plan, a human plan. We field the emails and handle the 3D logistics of it, but most of it's out of our hands.
Yeah.
So yeah, and we have a wonderful team that helps us at the quests, Denise, Jada, Sheila, and then we have other people that come and go. They're not there every single time, but, Caitlin, Mari, wonderful starseeds, Riley, that have all participated in support, because we can't run that whole event with just the three of us. So, the help of those star seeds is immeasurable, and then we have another team helping us with the radio show, Fiona, Jada, Kathy. In the past, we've had Vanya and Claudia. We love all of you, and so appreciate what you do. And we just have star seeds all over the world, and it all started with you going to Cairo in 1983.
Yeah, and taking those.
Think,
yeah.
You know, taking those geese and giving them to Garland. When you stand back and you look at it in retrospect, you're going to say, this was so divinely planned. But when you're right in it, you don't see that. You know,
well, that's the way I was when that's the way I was when Giant Rock cracked. It's like, oh my goodness, this has really happened. He told me this would happen, and it's happened. And now what am I going to do? It's like, by this time, I've already gone through 25 years of high strangeness to the point of almost insanity. So it's like, okay, the rock is cracked now, and I'm not sure if I want to take it out of the vault. You know, you had to coach me a long time before I ever brought it out of the vault, if you remember that.
Yeah, well, you needed a double Aries to light that fire under you.
Yeah, that's true.
And now, I mean, there are so many people. I mean, literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And they're all, I mean, they're star seeds. And then for those people, if they each touch one person or they awaken another star seed, it's spreading. It's spreading. And it's global. It's not just here in the United States. I mean, it's everywhere. And we think about the people that we've met that come from, you know, from England, from Germany, from Ireland, from Italy, Norway.
Australia.
New Zealand. And we've had people from Indonesia and India, Germany.
Vietnam,
France. You know, it's just, it's amazing to step back and look at how this is spreading. And the reason that we wanted to tell this story is because there are lots of star seeds out there who are actually on a defined track to, you know, the success of their mission and getting it out there. But very often, you're unaware of that. You might think you're lost or that you don't, you know, have anything to any direction, or and your team is upstairs just kind of laughing. It's like, oh, she thinks she's lost. But they have a plan, and they just nudge here and there. So the key is just to keep your ears open. And when you get a nudge, when you get a feeling, when you get something that starts pulling at you, don't submerge it, because it's, you know, that's how this internal guidance works. You know, excuse me. And for me, it's like, okay, they had to throw a man into the mix. That'll get her out of Key West. Sure enough, it did. You know, and he just happened to live in Jupiter, where you were going to be.
To find the Eagles. I had to find the Eagles.
Yeah.
Jupiter. Yeah.
5 years in the future, that's where you were going to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, in retrospect, it's real clear. But when you're right in it, it's not clear at all. And you feel...
Right.
Maybe lost. So the point is, even if you think that you don't have a direction or you don't know where you're going, you're already on your path. And, you know, just like the movie Castaway, you never know what the tide's going to bring in. So keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and know that you're not alone and you have powerful friends in high places who are helping to direct you to where you said you wanted to go in this lifetime.
One of the things I'd like to add is that each one of the quests that we've had, we send the Gizas with the people, and they go and plan them or give them, or because the Gizas kind of have a mind all of their own, and they let you know where they want to go. And so I'm putting together a map of where all the Gizas have been placed, and they were actually turned on, I think, last November or November before that. I can't remember. It was in the last couple of years. Anyway, on Pleiadian lineup. So I know they're beeping, and if we could look from space, I think we'd see a crop circle of some kind. There's a pattern of where these geysers have been placed. I just really feel strongly about that. So, and we don't have many of them left, so we're not promoting this to get people to carry geysers, because that's in fact, you really can't go on the website and really order them without having a session with us or coming to the quest. I want to make that very clear.
Yeah, there's just a finite number of them left. So when they're gone, they're gone, I guess.
Yeah,
but
that's
right. a cool thing about the geysers is that they will program other crystals.
Yes.
So you could, if you could come up with the solution crystals, which they are because they form in water, they're tiny little hair-like, double-terminated. If you can find a source of those, and you get the original geysers from Egypt, then you can turn the others into geysers.
They will jump start them. You can jump start them. Yeah.
That's what I was looking for. They will program other crystals with their energy, but the geysers themselves, they don't absorb energy.
They're not like ordinary.
Crystals. They don't hold emotions or anything like that. They are a balancing beam between man and nature, and Lord knows we need one. Every time we listen to Anastasia's news. And when she's talking about all the flooding, I mean, I kept wondering that if Noah was going to float by pretty soon. Because, we've just had floods all over the world. So, yeah.
Yeah. And how about the fires? Fires and water are happening right now. Fires and water. The fires of the Amazon, fires in California.
Yep. Well, people that think that our habits have not affected the weather system, might want to think again.
Think again.
Yeah. So, well, I think that's the whole story here.
If there's anybody that's been to the quest that wants to come on and say anything in the next 10 minutes, we would love to hear from you. I don't know if anyone is listening. Most people hear our podcast in the archives the next day or during the week.
Wednesday's the day for the most listens. But, all three of our producers, Kathy, Jada, and Fiona, they are all Quest alumni. And, Jada, I think you've been to the Quest. Out of 28, you've probably been to at least 20 of them. So
let's hear from Jada. Yeah, let's hear from Jada.
Okay. Buckle up, Jada. I'm opening up your microphone.
Hey.
Hey, Jada.
Hey, thank you for bringing me on. Yeah, thank you guys for doing this show. This has been amazing. I'm so glad you all did this and the three of you came together and brought all the rest of us together. It's been quite a journey so far.
Well, yeah, and even looking back over all the quests and seeing, each one of you has gotten so much stronger in your own way. And I'm gonna bring Kathy and Fiona here as soon as they are available. They seem to be talking to each other. But yeah, and Jada, you are so much a part of the quest. It wouldn't be the same without you. And the help and support that you give is it's priceless. So
and it's funny what you were saying about how you know, we can't plan it this way. Things just happen. There have been a few times when I thought there was no way I could make it, but if I'm supposed to be there, it all works out.
Right, right. Yeah, a lot of people have done that. It's like, you know what? I'm coming, and I'm going to let the universe work out the details. And, you know, money shows up, days off of work are granted. I mean, we've seen all kinds of miraculous things that we've had. Also, we've had people, you know, driving in, seeing the ships. And of course, they're always there when we're there with the group. But I'm waiting for Fiona and Kathy to come out of the little screening room there. But and I don't want to just jump in. So, Jada, I'm going to let you go, and maybe you could jump in there and tell them if they would like to, you know, come on and make a few comments. So we love you.
Okay, I sure will. I love y'all too. Thank you.
Okay, sweetie. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Lavendar, when you think about all of the wonderful people that we've met, not only doing the readings, but, you know, going to Arkansas. And we were just talking about that, you know, at the last quest. You know, people like Craig Campobasso, who's doing The Stranger at the Pentagon. It's Starseed Hotline is kind of a magnet for starseeds. And the amazing thing, and I know that you see this too, we'll see, you know, when you get readings and we do them in the order that the requests come in, we'll see patterns. And I keep seeing the same patterns of people that order. They've got the same star markings. Now, how does that happen? It's got to be that.
Yeah, I get the same thing. It's
GPS, and because there are tons of star seeds, and they've got to have a whole variety of star markings. But it seems like there's a preponderance of people with a handful of the same markings over and over and over and over again. So that's a great thing to see. Okay, now Kathy and Fiona are out of the their little chat talking room. So I'd like to open up your mics, ladies, and have you both make any comments that you might feel inspired to do. Fiona and Kathy, you're both on the air.
Well, this is Fiona, and I'd like to say I went on the first Crystal Quest in 2012. Was that 13, 14?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been about almost 7 years ago that I met up with your group. And it was a very, very interesting experience. I was one of the people that was able to slip in sort of under the radar. There was no spots left, but when and I was one of these people like, oh, I've seen Lavendar's name on the, you know, the internet. And when all that happened, and then I called and applied for the crest with Ariel, and then all of a sudden there was a position open up for a room there, and I ended up going, and subsequently meeting up with several people by a interesting situation. I ended up working as a producer for the show. We thought Lavendar had already approved it, and we just went ahead and there you go. There I was. And I've had some very interesting, I travel all over. If people don't know who I am, I'm a flight attendant. So I go all over the place. And I do put Giza crystals there, but also Lavendar had advised me to also wear the Gizas and, you know, for my traveling purposes. But it's an amazing experience. If you haven't done so, it's just, and you're thinking about going, it can be a very eye-opening experience, a very welcome home feeling experience, and it's an educational and an acknowledgement of who you are as a starseed standing in your own self. So there's some very, very good things that I enjoyed about doing that. And of course, I love working with all of you every week. It's just a joy. So I appreciate you bringing me on. Thank you.
We love you too, Fiona. And Kathy.
Thank you.
Kathy,
I think my first quest was in 2014, but I had
yeah,
heard,
you were one of the earlier ones. Yeah.
Yeah, I had heard Lavendar doing Crack Between the Worlds, I believe it was, and talking about the rock splitting, but I just heard her voice, and I was like, I want to go there. So I did, and it has changed me for the better, and I'm stronger in my power, and I've had many different experiences over the years, and if you ever get a chance to go, it's well worth it.
Kathy, how many times have you been?
I'm not sure. About five or six, maybe.
Yeah. You've been there quite a bit, yeah.
Sounds about right. Yeah, you're one of the family.
Yeah.
And you're one of the people that had activation of latent artistic ability. I mean, you came back after one of the first couple of quests with painting.
I really wanted to start painting, and so I started taking lessons, and then once I kind of got into it, I started getting downloads of information while I was doing the art, and so that's been very interesting.
I mean, with with a brush or pencils, and also with music, because you got those crystal chimes. But yeah, I mean, it just like your artistic side was turned on, turn it up to 10. But yeah, I just love that picture you made for me of my horse. When I wake up in the morning, that's the first thing I see.
The one that you made for me, it's like your latent masterships came right front and center. That's what happened, Kathy.
Well, thank you all. It's all of you all putting all this together and doing all the behind-the-scenes work, and it's very much appreciated.
Thank you.
Well, it's so worth it. So worth it. So, well, I think we're about ready to wrap it up, unless anybody has any final comments.
I think there's two other people that want to say something. I don't know if you saw those or not.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Who?
Okay. All right. We have a couple of callers. Thank you for telling me that, Kathy, because I hadn't scrolled down, so I didn't see the notes. Okay. Well, we've got Lynn, of course. So let me get your mic open, Lynn. Hey, Lynn.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Nice to hear yours. And what fun to hear this journey, which I've had a little peripheral exposure to with Lavendar and both of you. And I didn't know you were in Key West.
Yeah, that was the last place I was before I went to Jupiter, which is where I met Lavendar.
Well, I had several businesses there during that time. I didn't know that. Yeah, and I'm sure at some time we'll speak off the record, but I'm sure I know where you were, and we probably got some people in common. It's a very small island.
It is. It is, yeah. And everybody takes care of everybody else. So I really enjoyed it, but it was a year, and when it was over, it was over. That was
Where were you singing?
Oh, I sang at Sloppy Joe's. I sang at Rick's, and I sang at the Pier, that big hotel at the end
Pier
of...
House.
Yeah, the Pier House,
the Pier House
at the end of Duval Street. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I was right there with all the action. But yeah, and you, I met you when we first came to Atlanta, because you happened to be in town for something, and Lavendar said, "Well, you've got to meet Lynn." So we hooked up, and that was before Starseed Hotline, well before Starseed Hotline.
That's before France. She went with us to France too.
That's right.
I met Lavendar in the Capitol here as we're working for women's rights, actually.
Yeah.
So it's been a long journey, but very fun. So I would just encourage anyone that is interested. I was in France and had the opportunity to do that, and that was an extraordinary opportunity. And then to see and go to Arkansas, and what you and Tammy and that three sister spin has created. So I would encourage anyone who wants to, who, you know, listens to this line, that they should absolutely do that and make that trip to Arkansas.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. You know, it's very fulfilling for everybody. You know, not only for us, but for the people that come, and then seeing the friendships. You know, people's like long lost family, and then
yes.
You hear later, it's like, oh yeah, you know, they're collaborating now on a project. So that's just very, very rewarding and fulfilling to hear those things. So we'll be looking for you at another quest in Arkansas, Lynn.
You bet.
One of these times your schedule is going to be open and you're going to come. So we'll look forward to seeing you again there.
Thank you so much. And it's just hello to everybody.
Okay. All right. Big hugs.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Yep. Good night.
And now we have Joanne, and I think I know which Joanne this is. Hi, Joanne. Are you the one that came to my house?
yes, Ariel.
Okay.
Lavendar. The pet sitter in Jupiter Farms. And, I must say, too, to Lavendar and to you, Ariel, that crystals, the Giza crystals, were planted while living aboard our sailboat for 17 years, from Las Cruces to Maine, all around the entire Caribbean, and back to Las Cruces. Oh, probably up in the Great Lakes, too. I can't remember all the places, but Great Lakes through the inland rivers. And also, I'm happy that Lavendar got me to go to the big UFO convention at Giant Rock years ago and got to meet the Van Tassels. So it's been quite a journey, and it's just interesting the way we all meet and connect. And I am planning to come to one of the quests. I don't know which one, but I'm planning on it.
Yeah, I know.
Well,
I hear
you
coming.
And Lavendar, I took your advice. I've been practicing.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I do try and listen, you know, every Tuesday if I can. So just know I'm there.
Okay,
and we'll
thank
get together.
Okay.
I love it.
Thank you.
You know, Joan,
people.
When you're talking about sprinkling the geese all around the coasts and the inland rivers and the Great Lakes, I just looked. I thought, oh, like Joni Appleseed.
I know.
Plant
those
crystals.
Left. They grow, you know.
Well, yeah, they do grow.
I can't believe
they
it.
Do grow. Yeah, but
yeah,
you always
grow. And Joanne, I met you in 1977 during that whole George Van Tassel thing. So you've been with me all these years through everything. You've heard a lot of my experiences. You've been there when I've needed you. And you have been a very dear friend for many years, and I want to applaud you for that, because a lot of people get scared and they run, and you didn't.
No, and also thank you for getting me in touch with the ancient Great White Brotherhood. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm still receiving, you know, studies from them too.
Yeah, good.
So, but your program's very important, very, very important to reach more and more people.
Yeah.
Well, we love doing it. It's an honor, and we get to meet wonderful people like you.
I know. We need to get together again soon. So I just don't know which one should come to. Which one do you think, Lavendar?
I think you should come to one in March.
All right. I'll plan on
okay.
it.
Okay. That's when all I right. do Athena and the 96 Goddesses material. Yeah. I think
all
that's
right.
the one you Yeah, you need to come to that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I
all
gotta
right.
get the date and plan
okay.
it.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, it's
yes.
March 20th through the 23rd.
Okay, March 20th through 23rd.
Yeah.
I will be there.
Okay. Right. That sounds good. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Joanne. I know
right.
Lavendar loves hearing from you. Okay,
yeah.
Bye-bye, sweetie.
Well, bye. Much love.
Well, I think that's all the callers we have, but we have a lot of callers on the switchboard tonight, and that is really heartwarming, and we so appreciate our Starseed community, so many wonderful people, and you're not alone. From our vantage point, we get to see that there are Starseeds everywhere, but they pretty much just don't talk about it with the guy next door, but trust me, there are star seeds awakening all over the planet. Many star seeds been awake for a long time, been doing the work, and it's a beautiful thing to watch because it's so needed. It is so needed. When you hear Anastasia talking about some of the scary things that are happening in the world, the star seeds are going to be doing something that will result in a much better world.
Yeah, when the cosmic pimple, let me say this, Ariel, when the cosmic pimple busts, which it will, then the star seeds will rise up everywhere, and then we'll have a new civilization on the planet. There's millions
and
of
that
us.
Was, that's the plan all along.
Yep.
That was the plan all along. So, you know, they've been planted. Star seeds have been planted all over the planet. Different soul groups, different abilities, but all with the same goal of a peaceful world, an Aquarian world.
Right.
Yeah. So that's it for us tonight, boys and girls. And we thank you so much for listening. Did you have something else to say, Lavendar?
No, I just I'm happy that we were able to share our story with our audience. A lot of people have been listening to us for many, many years, and I think they will have probably a better idea about where we come from now after hearing this story. So thank you for bringing it up for us to do tonight. Thank you so much, Ariel. And for you, Tammy, and for everyone that's been working with us all this time, I love all of you and appreciate what you're doing in the name of Starseed and in the name of Goddess, too. You know, the women are rising up all over the planet. I just hope that they can hold it together so that we'll be invited to the next dance, okay? That's the way I want it.
Well, we have powerful unseen hands helping all of us. And just remember that no matter where you are, no matter what position you're in, there is a plan. So allow yourself to be guided, and they will.
Right.
So until next week, take care of yourselves, and remember, your power exists in your choices. So choose compassion
and choose gratitude. Until next week, everyone, good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.